number one, the benefits of pasteurized milk to the industry is it lasts a lot longer. It has a longer shelf life. You don't really need great quality, and you have a lot more volume.
A lot more volume.
So who makes more money?
Welcome to the world of Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener, you're back with episode 34 of The World of Muscle with Tomash and Randy. Hey, Randy.
Morning, Tomash.
How are you doing?
Not bad today. Not bad.
Today, we actually have some sunshine today for a change. We've had a few cloudy days.
Yeah, I can see the sun. My fog layer is a little thinner, so I can easily see the sun as opposed to a cloudy day, which makes a difference, believe it or not.
Yes. I remember when we were in Rochester at the Mr. America, and I was sitting across from you and the sun was shining on me. You almost saw my outline.
Yeah, on that particular day in the summer, I think you were in something blue, weren't you?
I can't remember.
I could see more than I normally can.
Maybe that was my aura. If blue is a good aura, I don't know.
I remember Ken Sprague was wearing yellow.
He was wearing yellow. I remember that.
Yeah. So colors were standing out. Bright colors stand out through the thick fog.
Cool. So today, we're gonna address one of our listeners' requests. He asked us what the big deal about milk is, because Arnold said milk is for babies.
Yeah, Pumping Iron 1977. Yeah, that was the year Pumping Iron was released. It was filmed in 75. That statement might have even been filmed earlier. I'm not sure exactly when George Butler started doing all his filming for the movie. The book was out in 74. But he started filming, probably 75, where he did, was in that prison. I can't remember the name of the prison offhand.
Oh, wow.
But it was where Paul Graham was, anyway, was served his time earlier.
The actual quote goes on to saying, "Milk is for babies. When you grow up, you have to drink beer."
Good voice, right? he's right kind of in a sense, and typically everybody, all infants that drink the milk, but then you go into adults and drink beer.
Yep.
Great advice.
Anyway, so what is the big deal about milk?
It's just been around.
You're a big milk drinker.
I am right now because of my skin condition. It's one of the few things I can take in a lot of, and it's not bothering me. Where chicken doesn't bother me. Beef seems to agitate and speck on my skin. So I have been drinking a lot of milk, a gallon a day for the past few years. Where before that, I drank the raw milk. I drink raw milk only, and I didn't drink that much, but I have been quite a bit. And you know, with milk, I never get sick of it, right? It just always tastes just the same as good every day that I have it. But milk has had a history in bodybuilding all the way back to probably the one that what made it really popular was the gallon of milk.
The GOMAD?
Protocol, yeah, back with J.C. Heist, Mark Berry back in 1930, where most lifters out there are familiar with, okay, the 20-rep squat and the gallon of milk day protocol.
Yep.
Because that was made popular back then, just drinking lots of milk. Perry Rader, who owned Iron Man from 1936 to when did he sell that magazine to John Balick? Around 1986?
Yeah, I believe
it was. That 50 years or so? He was a big proponent of the 20-rep squat and drinking lots of milk, because Perry actually put on 100 pounds doing that. So, you know, a gallon of milk brings in, you know, anywhere 2,400, 3,000 calories a day, and it's, you know,
it's easy to drink.
Yeah, it's about 130 grams of protein, and it's still higher in fat than lactose and carbohydrate. A lot of people have problems with lactose, especially from pasteurized milk. Raw milk's a different story, because the enzyme that digests lactose, lactase, is still active. I could not drink. I could drink pasteurized milk as a kid, but it did not sit well with me at all. I could just feel it sitting in my stomach, right? So I was surprised when I started with raw milk. Jeez, 17 years ago, I have no problems with raw milk at all. And even if I would have drank a gallon of pasteurized milk, I would have been parked on the toilet probably for the remainder of the day. But with raw milk, it's totally different.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different substance. And people just refer to it as milk. Milk is milk. It's not.
When you get milk fresh from a grass-fed cow, okay, its constituency is totally different from being fed grains, the proportions and such. Even the question of whether it's conjugated linoleic acid, CLA, which is one thing that's sought after in the bodybuilding community, if it's even present in milk from cows fed grains.
Grains.
But when you look at what's in the supermarket, the process in which that milk, number one, it's we can also talk a little bit about A1 and A2 cows, because that's becoming a little bit more of a controversy. But before that, like Holstein cows are very popular in North America for milking. And
because they produce more milk.
Then certain hormones can be used to make them produce quite a bit more milk. And they have...
a gene.
No, before I was going to do that, I was going to... Where was I heading here on this topic here?
You were going to talk about the difference between A1 and A2, but before that, you were talking about the milk in grocery stores, supermarkets.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I got sidetracked with Holstein cows, but milk, before it goes into a grocery store, goes through quite a process. It is separated. It needs to be pasteurized and homogenized.
And well, the reason, sorry to cut you off, but just one step back, the reason it needs to be pasteurized beforehand is because they milk cows at least three times a day, which means an 8-hour shift is how long it takes to milk all the cows, and the milk's udders get infected often because they shouldn't be milked that many times. And what the infection does is it creates pus on the teats, which goes right into the milk, and they can't sell that. So they have to pasteurize it, kill it, whatever is in there, all the bacteria, all the infection, and then they need to bottle it. So back to you.
Yeah, well, pasteurization goes back over 100 years before even that was an issue. We get into even the distillery farms and things like that. But commercial milk goes through a process where they heat it. There's different temperatures. It used to be 140, then 145. Then there's ultra pasteurization when the temperature goes up quite a bit higher. I think it's in 160 degrees Fahrenheit right now. But they separate it.
Fahrenheit or Celsius?
Fahrenheit.
Okay.
They basically separate the fat from the milk, and they literally are adding powders to give it more body to the skim milk part. But it's what they heat it and pasteurize it. It's what they do with the fat. They literally homogenize the fat, because if you just take raw milk, the fat will settle on the top. You'll get a layer, and you have to shake it up, which is, you know, big deal. You shake it up, and the milk the fat disperses within the milk. But in the commercialization of milk, what they do is homogenize. They drive the milk through tiny little orifices to create these little milk globules, which destroys the vitamin A and the vitamin D in it. So, but it will now dispense in the milk, disperse in the milk in a more homogeneous fashion. So that's what they call homogenization. But the destruction of, they can introduce the fat back at 1%, 2%, how much fat you even want, or even a skim.
And they can control it.
Yeah, they can control it. But when you take commercial milk, from the process, say using the type of, like, say, Holstein cows that have been raised on grains, and then the milk is pasteurized, homogenized, it is entirely different from, say, milk from a grass-fed Jersey cow and Guernsey cow. We can tell the difference with the difference between those cows as well. But the milk has been severely damaged, and it's been affiliated with a lot of different diseases. But unfortunately, the broad brush wipes out all milk, and this is just far from being the truth, right? Milk has a long history going back. Okay, this process of homogenization and pasteurization, it goes back to what's called distillery dairies. And that's a good question. What the hell is a distillery dairy?
I was going to ask, what's a distillery dairy?
Okay, a lot of this is covered in Volume 1 of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. Around the 18th, just to turn on the 18th century, the United States had acquired, they were getting a lot of their whiskey and booze from England. At the War of 1812, things weren't too friendly between the two countries, and the United States had to quickly come up with their own distillery operations, or they're going to have a lot of DTs, a lot of withdrawal symptoms going on in America.
Yeah.
So they started, their own whiskey distilleries came up. And somebody got the bright idea of housing dairy cows on the same grounds as the distilleries and feeding them the grains, the byproduct of grains from making whiskey. And they started feeding this to the cows. And they started calling these distillery dairies. And the milk of these cows were not healthy. And the milk had a blue tinge to it. And again, it's not surprisingly that certain diseases which were related to you know, typhoid and certain diphtheria and all the other infectious diseases being related to this milk. And that's when the idea of pasteurizing it, of boiling it, or bringing it, not quite boiling, but bringing it, heating it to a certain amount to kill these pathogens.
Pathogens.
So they, for a long time, New York area was drinking this, they call it swill milk. And it was just totally inferior milk. And by 1890s, actually a medical doctor, Dr. Henry Coyett, he was championing the medicinal qualities of real milk. So he wanted to clean up a certain number of these farms. Dr. Ron Schmidt wrote a lot about this in his Untold Story of Milk. And he got a licensing process, a certification for these farms, that they clean up the farms and create a medical quality raw milk. And at the same time, another fellow, Nathan Strauss, a more entrepreneur guy, was taking the other route. Let's just find a way to take this bad milk and make it safer, basically, by pasteurizing it. And he made it very cheap. So it was, that's the type of milk that dominated, was sold all through that eastern seaboard, was this pasteurized milk that was inferior in the first place. So you have two different milks. One was from cows, probably quality cows on grass, creating a raw milk that's certified compared to this swill milk that's just pasteurized. And homogenization came later. Pasteurization came in around the turn of the century. And homogenization came around 1920, around that area. But it helped. Obviously, the pasteurization process helped minimize a lot of the breakout infectious diseases. But there was a bit of confusion at that time, because it was around the turn of the century, 1905, 1910, that sanitation processes improved dramatically. And that was a cause of a lot of infectious diseases. So by that time, I believe Milton Rosenau, he was a physician that came up with 145 degrees temperature to pasteurize. Later on, their higher temperatures came in and ultra pasteurization. But he was a prominent physician that went on to have the big voice. But the problem was, they took a potential great food, and instead of mass fixing it like Dr. Henry Coyett wanted to create his
certified.
Yeah, what did he create? The American Association of Medical Milk Commissions, that California still has certified raw milk,
but
they're losing it. But instead of championing this method of creating medicinally valuable food and through milk, raw milk, the entrepreneur always wins out for business, right? Bigger business.
Well, look at it this way. It's a lot more work, and probably for a lot less product. Yeah. So money always wins.
Always triumphs out. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you can, number one, the benefits of pasteurized milk to the industry is it lasts a lot longer. It has a longer shelf life. You don't really need great quality, and you have a lot more volume.
A lot more volume.
So who makes more money? Yes.
Yeah, especially with a growing population. And then to allow the homogenization process, you got to remember, by the 1920s, the medical doctors had been dietarily dumbed down. This is probably another show where the Flexner Report of 1910 basically reformatted the entire medical community, and diet was out, drugs were in, and pharmacology was in. So by 1920, there was nobody really of a nutritional orientation to speak up in any way, shape, or form. And so even in the medical field, they're saying, we'll just neutralize these potential pathogens. We're not going to fix the milk at the source. We'll just neutralize it, not realizing that they're destroying a valuable food supply that's creating a strain on the human body to deal with it, because we never had to have a product like that in our body. Our body was meant to have it in its natural state. So what I remember just earlier in this, what we were talking about earlier, the amount of damage done. First of all, the cows are an inferior breed, the Holstein cows. There's a change up there we'll talk about in a second. But the way they're being fed, nobody really fixed how they're being fed. And so they just use technology in terms of heat and mechanical destruction of the fat with homogenization, pasteurization, and put this out as a healthy product. And it's not at all resembling what it was originally meant to be, right?
Well, mainly because the fat staying on the top was?
It was healthy. We can't have that. So they pulverized it. They tiny, tiny little globules so it'll stay suspended in the milk. So people, they just did it. Where did that brilliant idea come from other than to create an inferior product? So milk has had a mainstay from in bodybuilding. I said with that 20 rep squat routine by Joseph Curtis Kyson in 1930, he and Perry Rader championed milk in the 20 rep squat, the gallon of milk 20 rep squat protocol. Randy Strassen in his 1989 book was very popular republication of that protocol that started back in the 1930s. But by 1980s, 90s, everybody's drinking an entirly different product. Even Joseph Curtis, I said, if he's on the farm, he's going to get good quality raw milk. But if he's, you're in the city, you're filling yourself with this pasteurized, homogenized, inferior product.
I mean, you have the example of actually drinking that much milk and getting leaner.
Yeah.
Right? I remember you used to do the anabolic diet where you'd actually have no carbs throughout the whole week, and on the weekend you'd gorge on milk and you'd melt the fat off, literally melt the fat off.
I would pour extra cream in it. I had my calories up to 10,000 on Saturday and Sunday. With me, my body really reacts to carbohydrates, so I can really put in a lot of calories if there are very low carbohydrates. Now, milk comes with lactose, which is a milk carbohydrate. It's an animal carbohydrate. It's very low glycemic. It's what I mean by it for the listeners: low glycemic. It does not raise the blood sugar quickly, so it's every other carbohydrate can have a more dramatic glycemic effect. So I can still drink a lot of raw milk and still not gain weight even through the week. But if I start adding like starch, I got to be very judicial and strategic of how I eat my other carbohydrates. Or that's as soon as you bring the insulin out in a big fashion. Bernard McFadden, the milk diet, before insulin was out, there's talk of practitioners using raw milk for diabetics before they had insulin. So the lactose, you can tell, it was not that dramatic on the blood sugar, or they wouldn't be able to do that. So I don't know a lot. I haven't read a lot about that, but I've heard about the milk diet for diabetes before insulin was out.
Well, there were sanitariums, right, for people who had diabetes. And Sally Fallon writes, well, actually she didn't write this, but Dr. J.R. Crew wrote about the milk diet or the milk cure back in 1929.
Yeah.
That was used for pretty much anything and everything, and including diabetes.
Yeah.
And this is from the Mayo Foundation, which is a forerunner of the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah.
But then the Mayo Clinic no longer even sees milk as anything.
In bodybuilding, remember Rio Blair, he championed raw cream and raw milk. Significantly. And he came out with, Rio had his protein powder. And he, in 1966, he made this claim of mother's milk. And I was trying to figure out when I was writing Volume 1. What made him claim he had this mother's milk balance? And the only thing I could think of is he added in the ingredient in that year, he added alpha-lactobumin. There is one of the proteins in whey. There's beta-lactoglobulin and alpha-lactobumin. And human milk doesn't have beta-globulin in it. It's just the cow's milk does. Cow's milk is 80% caseinate and 20% whey, where human milk can vary almost 50-50 to 60-40 in favor of whey milk, but it's all alpha-lactobumin. And I'm just wondering, he had his powder was before was just a lot of caseinate milk in egg. So by adding that alpha-lactobumin whey protein in 1966, he could say he added half and half, which he could now say, I have a blend that's close to human breast milk, which is kind of true. So that's in the whole mother's milk craze for Rio Blair took off from the 1960s and through into the Rio died in 1983. But we were in 1978. Don Horwath was saying he had something else that he said really had a kick to it, and I was speculating. I think whether he had colostrum, he had added colostrum
because he got most of his calories from milk at one point, along with Larry Scott, right?
Oh, Don, what was Don's diet in 1968? It was 2 pounds of meat. I think he had 2 quarts of cream. He wasn't doing a lot of milk at that time, but it was 2 quarts of raw cream and 3 dozen eggs. So 3 dozen eggs, 2 quarts of cream, and 2 pounds of meat. That is a lot of food. And it was close to 10,000. Volume one, I looked at that diet. And Don was getting the raw cream because that's what Blair wanted. Blair knew about raw. He left Chicago in 1958. He was still able to get some raw dairy in Chicago. There was ways around it. Even though Chicago had one of the early pasteurization laws back in 1908, but Blair, probably one of the reasons he went to California, he was into the showbiz flair anyways, but he was able to get, California had the certified raw milk program, so he had absolutely no problem getting his raw dairy out on the coast in the 1960s. But that's what I speculated how he came up with the mother's milk balance. Blair was a pretty smart guy. You know, he was pretty well read. He was up on hormone and everything. He was reading quite a bit right from the early 1950s. But there's a lot of talk these days about, not most people aren't aware about A1 and A2 cows and the difference in the milk. Most of the cows in America are called Holsteins. They're a younger cow. Comparative to, say, the older Guernseys, Jerseys, Shorthorns, there's a lot of different breeds where it's speculated that a few thousand years ago, there was like a mutation. There's two major proteins in milk, whey and casein. Okay. And on the casein chain, I think it's at the 57th link. The amino acid used to be proline, and it's mutated to histidine, and that is believed to be giving people problems. So it's not in many of the older cows. So it's called the A1 and A2 cows, where most of the milk in North America be from the A1 cows with this mutation to it. So you don't see a lot of it. You don't read a lot about it. And I don't know how much merit is given to it, but that is one of the beefs about raw milk right now. What's your sources? If you can stay away from Holsteins, if you can get a lot of smaller farms, the mainstream dairies do Holstein cows, which have that issue because they're just easier, sturdier cows to work with, and they're abused. Like as you were saying, with milking
3 times a day.
Yeah, where the other cows are usually from smaller farms, where they're not giving as much milk, and that they give a different, their milk has a different
Constitution
in terms of that 57th amino acid on the casein chain that is still proline instead of histidine.
Histidine.
Yeah. So there's you can research that. People can research it. I've never had a problem. I've had it from Holsteins and I've had it from Jerseys, and I've never noticed a different allergy wise or stuff like that. I've always responded very well. I never did respond well to pasteurized milk as a kid. It just seemed to set like a rock in my stomach.
All I was going to say, when people have these reactions or responses, the experts kind of put all of them in the same boat, right? Pasteurized milk or raw milk, and it's not the same.
No, it's not at all.
Like you know how when you're sick and you have congestion, you're not supposed to drink milk because it makes you more fluidy or more congested? Mucusy is the term. But there's no differentiation between what type of milk does that.
No, and there's still a controversy whether mucus is a good thing. It may be a good thing. It's a way for the body to detoxify out through the nasal passages and whatever. Like it's a natural process.
Yeah, it brings in, it attracts all the bad stuff, so you get it out.
As we know, medical doctors are not trained in nutrition. So to them, milk is white. It's the same thing. But as we were talking earlier, pasteurized commercial milk is entirely different in how the cows it comes from, in many cases, from how it's fed, especially with grass. We talked about conjugated linoleic acid, CLA, in milk that's sought after in the bodybuilding. It's believed to heighten muscle and burn fat. It's actually a trans fat. It's a naturally occurring trans fat, but they say it does not occur in an acidic environment, which wouldn't, so it would not probably be in commercial milk, because the acid, the acidity base of commercial milk is more so than cows from grass. So you got an entirely different product. As I mentioned earlier, it's separate. Commercial milk is separated. It's homogenized. It's pasteurized. They literally admit it destroys the vitamin E, so they add synthetic vitamin A and D and some more powdered milk to add more body to it. So they have, you almost have an entirely different product, but a doctor would not know any of this. So he just said, I'll just, you know, stay away from milk. A lot of doctors still say drink milk for calcium, blah, blah, blah. And the calcium is even taken, precipitated out of its colloidal state when you pasteurize it. You know, like, I mean, it's milk is just more, much more sensitive to heat than, say, other foods. Like, I'm a raw food eater, but of course I'm biased, but it's obvious people live long, healthy lives eating cooked food, but there are other, certain foods have more dramatic negative effect when they're applied to heat. And milk is, it's not the heat pasteurization. It is the homogenization process, is how the cow is raised and what the cow is fed. That even changes a lot of the constitution of the milk. Right?
Now let's go back to the original comment of milk is for babies. And that's the biggest objection that you hear from people, is that, oh, no other animal drinks milk after they grow up.
They're not fed milk, but they will. Like, I mean, animals will drink raw milk if they're given it. But they're right. It's typically we're weaned off. But
they don't have the skills to extract the milk.
This is true. Again, the argument has merit. The only counter to it is that we have, as a civilization, it's been in our recorded history for 6,000 years, that we have drank milk from other animals, and raw milk is in some of the healthiest cultures ever recorded in history. It's only in the 20th century when we started bastardizing the milk with this homogenization and pasteurization process that have we seen potential problems with it. But you go all through yak milk, camel milk, sheep's milk. Sheep's milk is almost like pure cream. It's been in cultures for millennia without any disease issues whatsoever. It's in the Bible. It's in everything. So it's got a long history to it. Yes, it's unorthodox, but it's been a practice in civilization for as long as it's been recorded. So that is the counter argument to it. And basically people have a choice. If they, okay, if they don't want to drink it, don't drink it. But it's got a long record in bodybuilding. Not so much today because it's been beat up so much. But, you know, you go back. I wrote in volume.
Protein powders last longer.
Yeah, and they make you a lot more money too. So the cow, desiccated liver, you know, the beef, you know, the dairy, the yes. butter, the his hide for lifting belts and everything. The poor cow has really given a coughed it up for bodybuilding, hasn't he? But milk, I mean.
But look at it this way. Back when a cow or even a baby is born, what do they drink? They drink milk and they literally grow. So it's kind of synonymous with growing or building muscle.
Yeah, it's got the growth factors, IGF growth factors, IG1, IG2, and stuff. Like, look at Holworth and those guys back. They were doing these marathon workouts where they were drinking a gallon through the workout alone. But again, that's a four-hour workout. These guys just intuitively needed food. Like, I forget the one big-name lifter would show up on – this was before Don went to Vince's, and he'd show up with a trunk full of raw milk, and each of the guys would grab a gallon and they'd start working out. And I think Bill Pearl did the peanut oil. He did the pint of peanut oil through the workout. But
Larry Scott was big on the milk.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a big proponent of Real Blair and his protein powder. So, yeah. Again, Blair championed milk, and so did Vince. Vince championed raw milk and raw cream, raw eggs. They all had that blend of a quart of raw cream and a dozen raw eggs. Like, I could not, you have to have a strong physiology just to even process and assimilate that amount of density of food. Like, you just, can you imagine like a quart of cream and a dozen raw eggs?
Mm-hmm.
And Vince would recommend three doses of that a day, up to three doses if you can handle it. So that's
a lot.
It just bogged me down, right? So you can tell anybody who could assimilate that has quite a sound physical constitution, and they're probably going to build muscle pretty easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, Vince and Real both championed the raw dairy through the 1960s and certified raw dairy in California. They're both in California at that time. But milk had really fell by the wayside with the onslaught of the protein powders. And they thought this is.
Especially these days, everyone recommends you you mix it with water.
Yeah, and I contend that the protein powders have descended lower than the actual pasteurized and homogenized milk, because now you have fractionated foods stripped of all its synergists and cofactors. Everything that's in milk is there for a reason. It helps the process and assimilate the product. But when you start stripping all these constituents out, the body has to leach off its own resources to process this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't know. It doesn't show up in 2 weeks. It shows up in some of these guys on for several years, and all of a sudden the arthritis has show up and all these degenerative diseases because the body's just being leached.
Yeah, they have to kind of make it, put it back to as a whole, all the fractionated stuff, and all the resources are within you, so it just leaches it out.
Yeah, so right now I'm drinking a gallon of raw milk a day, and it's from grass-fed cows, and it's loaded with all the vitamins, and it doesn't have absolutely everything, but it has, it takes babies from the start and can sustain alone for almost 2 years just on that. So I don't tell people, I just drink raw milk. I have other foods in there as well, but milk is loaded with a lot of constituents that are...
And it's very convenient on top of it. So the major point is, in our books, milk is good, but only raw milk and high quality raw milk from grass-fed cows. Yeah. And if the choice came down to drinking pasteurized milk or no milk, I would always go for no milk, because I wouldn't drink the pasteurized milk, and I wouldn't recommend anyone drink the pasteurized milk.
Yeah, I have to agree there. Perhaps for some, there are some milks out there that are not homogenized and they're lower temperature pasteurized. It's still pasteurized and it still makes a difference.
I guess that would be the second choice, is non-homogenized milk, right?
That seems to be a damage that's possibly even surpasses pasteurization.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's different temperatures at which milk is pasteurized, but
Well, you'll never know in a commercial setting. So you don't know how much they use that day. It probably also depends on who operates the machinery.
Then you can't trust the advertising at all.
Well, no, not at all.
So it's a matter of finding a good farmer who can supply you with what you want and know what.
And it is actually legal in 28 states, last I read.
Yeah, in Canada, if you own the cow, we have really tight laws, really stupid laws up here.
Yes.
If you can, people are trying to get around with cow shares that they own.
Yeah, you got to just have your own cow.
Yeah.
That's the easiest. That's how we do it. Is there anything else you want to say on milk?
I think it's something once we stop, but offhand, no. Anybody's any questions, they can obviously.
Yeah, if you have any questions, let us know and we'll address it in future episodes, like we created this one because someone asked. And a couple of news and updates. Our episode, American Muscle Monopoly, seemed to hit a nerve with some people because our servers started acting up, and I was trying to figure out what's going on. Why is it going down? It kept on crashing, and found out that we were being actively hacked for days on end, so I had to put some security measures in place that stopped. That episode is available. All episodes are available again. So our apologies for that happening. It took me a few days to figure out what was going on.
What was the last week's show we did? The
faster, better, stronger athletes.
Yeah, with the technology where I thought steroids. My show notes on that one are worth reading, because I clarified more of what I was trying to spit out during the talk and made my points clear. So if anybody wants to just go back and look at those show notes, I go through and show how steroids, in my opinion, really made the difference over that of tracks moving from one surface to another surface. So
cool.
I wanted to make that point.
And is there anything else? What's going on with the lawsuit?
I believe that... AMI, Packers David, AMI, American Media Corp, whatever, is countersuing Lee Thompson, I believe, but that's standard.
That's just how things go.
It was suits countersue to make say, I'm not guilty, you're guilty, and then countersue. So it's we're going to see. I think something might be in the media today. If it is, we can report it next week. So just got to wait and see what comes out from
Okay.
That.
I think that's it then. Thanks, Randy.
Yeah. Sounds good. Okay.
Thank you for listening to The World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.